Today on Movie Rollers, we review The 33, Victor Frankenstein, and Miss You Already. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And here's Dee as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
We are buried. We have...
swamped.
It's that time of year when the studios push out everything that I guess they want to have out before the end of the year for potential awards consideration, and... even though the podcasts have slowed down over the past couple of weeks, that's partly my doing because I've been traveling. We have got a ton of films to watch. We're going to be recording, what, three or four podcasts today?
Yes.
Yeah.
How many movies is that, Rashmi?
I think 14. We're covering 14 in the show, but each of us have been watching probably double that number outside of the regular screenings, catching up.
So what did we do over Thanksgiving weekend?
Binge watched.
Well, let's jump into our Netflix reviews, because one of the things I want to talk about is going to be a Netflix recommendation. But this segment of the show, I can't find anything on Netflix. Is really just our way of telling you what's out there on Netflix. If you are sitting at home with nothing to watch, there's a ton of stuff that you may not have heard of. Netflix does have a way of burying content. It's kind of annoying. I think they need to bring this stuff up to the surface a bit more. And I think you can train Netflix to give you recommendations. But there's so much good stuff that, I mean, I can't even find through the menu system. You can dig it out. So we thought one of our duties as your movie reviewing crew would be to highlight a few things that you may have missed. So Rashmi or Yazdi, got a pick?
Sure, I'll start then. So my first pick of the week is actually a treat for all of you, because this is actually going to be considered, I think, for award season. It's not one that we're going to talk about on a regular podcast, but we will cover it, I'm sure, as part of the awards. This is Beasts of No Nation. Mm-hmm. It's the film starring Idris Elba and a superb young actor.
Abraham Atta.
Yeah, Abraham Atta. Just a treat. So this is a treat because it's one that was playing in the cinemas very recently. It didn't get a long play. I think it was on the cinemas for a week, but it is playing on Netflix. Go and watch this. This is not entertaining in the sense of joyful, fun. It's a very deep movie. It will disturb you, but it's basically about a young boy in Africa, destination not specified, who becomes part of the rebel warriors, I guess, and just what happens to him. Just mind-blowing and wonderful acting by Idris Elba and Abraham Atta.
Have you seen it yesterday?
Yes, it's an incredible film. It's very intense, but it, you know, it just pulls you in. It really pulls you in. It's quite something, yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm kind of bummed that we didn't get to review it on the show, partly because I've got a lot to say about this movie, but yeah, it's a terrific watch. It's going to be in my top 10 films of the year. It really is up there for me. So yeah, good pick, Rashmi.
And I was going to pick something else to continue with my usual foreign films picks, but Rashmi, since you picked a movie which is currently streaming on Netflix, which will be for Oscar awards consideration this year, I'm going to give a name of another movie, which will also be hopefully for Oscar awards consideration, which is streaming on Netflix right now. And it's a movie called Tangerine.
Mm.
And Tangerine was shot entirely using the iPhone 5S, and it was shot guerrilla style. And it's essentially the story of two transvestite prostitutes in Los Angeles, one of whom is trying to connect with the man she loves, who also happens to be her pimp. And it's everything that, you know, a brash young filmmaker should make. The movie is funny. It's over the top. It's ridiculous. It's just a ride. It's an adventure. Yeah. It goes to a lot of places you don't expect it to go. But I just like that somebody can take an iPhone, get together a few actors, put together a script and make something whole and altogether unique from it. So Tangerine, do give it a try.
Yeah, well, Rashmi and I watched that one too. I struggled with it a little bit, but it got better towards the end. All I can say is persevere. Yes. And it becomes a riotous farce towards the end. So, that's not a complete waste of time. Sorry, Esty.
Hardly a sounding recommendation.
Clearly, I didn't love it quite as much as you did, but no, it was an interesting piece of film.
I don't love it. I just think I'm glad...
You support it.
I support it. I'm glad that there exists right now a system for somebody to make a movie like this.
And I think, yes, I'm probably in Joe's camp. I didn't love Tangerine, but I, like you, think it's important for movies in this category to be made.
Yeah.
And then my pick, which is not a movie at all. It is basically what Rashmi and I did with our Thanksgiving weekend when we weren't either eating or at the movies. And it's the Aziz Ansari series, Master of None. I picked up on it because everywhere I seem to go online seemed to be recommending this. And I went over to Rotten Tomatoes and there it was 100% critically approved. So we gave it a shot and yeah, we were sucked in.
Stunning.
It became something casual that we were trying to watch while eating and then turned into something that we basically obsessed about over the rest of the weekend until we were done with it. So it's, you know, Aziz Ansari is typically... a typical observational humor, but it's crafted into a television show and they really do some wonderful stuff in there. You know, they have a whole episode that, you know, does away with the whole kind of tropes that you see with respect to romantic comedies. It's billed as a rom-com, but it's so much more than that. And if you want to give it a shot, just give it half an hour. You won't waste your time.
Watch the first show. I mean, Aziz Ansari has always been a comedian that really appeals to my sense of humor. Joe and I actually watched him live a few months ago in San Diego, and he was great. And if you like his stand-up and you've seen some of his stand-up on Netflix and you enjoy them, then give the show a shot. It's just, he's masterful. Very good.
He's kind of hit and miss for me. He
is me too, yeah.
He seems to be not trying hard at all, and that's part of his persona. And so sometimes things stick, sometimes they don't. But there's so much buzz about this. I do want to check it out. Yeah.
For me, he's just one of those people, his face makes me laugh.
Oh.
Like just his face without him doing anything makes me laugh. And I think he's just so sweet. There's a real sweetness and endearingness about him, and that sweetness and endearment comes through in the show for me.
As well as the sharp edge
that
he brings.
Yeah,
there are some material in there that pushes buttons, but
yeah.
Still.
And Joe and I were saying, you know, you can probably call it akin to something like Girls, but it's not as raunchy. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to do comedy without being smutty and rude, and he manages this perfectly, yeah.
Okay. Right, well, we have three movies to talk about this week. Why don't we start with The 33? Because I think we're going to review... Oh, sorry, just to recap the Netflix. So it's Beast of No Nation from Rashmi.
Yep.
Yasta, you picked Tangerine, and my pick was Master of None. So go check out any of that stuff. Back to our movies of the week. So we have The 33, Victor Frankenstein, and Miss You Already. Let's start with The 33.
Yep.
So this is a movie that I, in particular, was very eager to see, and not necessarily because of the names or actors associated with the movie, but because this whole story of the miners that got trapped in a Chilean mine collapse a few years ago really struck a chord with me. I followed it avidly on the news. I was obsessed by it, and I literally sat there on the news with tears in my eyes when the situation kind of resolved itself, and it was a daring rescue. They were stuck underground for months under terrible conditions. So, you know, personally, this story has a lot of meaning to me just because of the news coverage and you know, I've read a ton about it. The movie itself is directed by Patricia Riggan, written by Jose Rivera, Mikko Elan. It's a writing team that was involved in this. Antonio Banderas, Juliet Binoche, I think, are the big names associated with the cast. And it's one that I was really, really bummed that I couldn't make the screening of. I was visiting family in England. But guys, what did you think of The 33? And in fact, Yasti, you didn't get to see this either.
I did not. I missed.
Yay! So Rashmi gets her own opinion only without Joe and Yasti.
You're wrong.
We can still disagree.
I know. Okay, so this is my review of The 33. So I think what's stunning about this is the cinematography and the saturated color of this movie outside the mine are so stunning right from the outset that you can't help to be totally drawn into here. This incredible tale, Joe, you said, of these 33 men who are stuck in a mine for 69 days. And the comparison that the film creates between being in the mine and outside the mine, the contradiction is beautiful. But I think this movie would have been better as a documentary because really it all came across as a little Lifetime Hallmark and too much melodrama versus, I think, where it could have really been about what happens to the human spirit when 33 men are confined to a small space. And I think that's the lost opportunity. So I think what this movie decided to do is rather like The Martian, the movie decides what to sort of explore what's happening inside the mine and outside the mine. And so it's an equal story of inside and outside. And I think it would have made for a more dramatic and interesting tale about, like I said, the human spirit if we'd spent more time inside the mine. So really what comes across is it's a little bit overdone and it's a little bit overacted. And you know, I mean, I think at the end of the day, when you get to the end of the movie, and we all know the ending, it's a good ending. You know, your spirits will soar because they all get out. I just think it was a lost opportunity overall.
So when you say Lifetime, do you mean kind of badly acted or because it strikes me as a kind of material that could very easily fall into the trap of being manipulative. In other words, you know, trying to create drama through, you know, dramatic dialogue and scenes rather than focusing on the interaction between characters. You know, it's like, let's ramp the music up and create drama that way. Or
yeah, any I think like it
that? That's what I think of with Lifetime.
Yeah, Lifetime to me means it lacks bite. It chooses not to go deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
And although it
pun
tries,
intended.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although it does explore some of the relationships between, you know, each of the men and their families, because their families are on the outside and the men are on the inside. You know, you've got a big cast, like a cast member like Juliette Binoche. So, you know, you have to give her equal time as you're going to give Antonio Banderas. It's just the way that the Hollywood movies are set up. So it just lacked bite. And I just feel like it didn't go deep enough in terms of really exploring what these guys went through. I mean, it's peripheral. You do see what they go through, obviously, because you spend some time in the mine with them. But 33 men in a small space, that there was a really lost opportunity there.
Yeah, it's such a great story. And I mean, the movie adaptation came really quickly, I think, on the heels of
the
actual.
I agree.
Yeah.
So I agree. They shouldn't make something perfunctory or something which appeals too easily to people's sensibilities. And it does seem like a lost opportunity. Because at one point, this movie was being considered in contention, like for best movie of the year before it came out, there was a lot of talk about it. And it's a shame that they couldn't make more out of that
situation. Exactly. So I guess I'd sum it up by giving it a score of maybe like, I don't know, six out of 10. I think what the movie does well is convey that each of these men were someone's father, brother, husband, and son. And sometimes that's easy to forget when you're watching a news article like this on the TV. You know, not a great movie, but it's not terrible either. For me, it just missed the mark of what I was looking for.
Okay. Well, yeah, 6 out of 10 is not bad. That sounds like one I want to check out maybe.
Yeah.
In the home environment. Okay, Victor Frankenstein is our next movie, but Rashmi, you're the only one that saw that.
Yay,
too. So
it's
I don't
Rashmi
want
show.
to squash that right away, we're going to go to the other movie of the week,
which is
Miss You Already.
So Catherine Hardwicke, most famously, who directed 13, and then more commercially, the first Twilight movies. She returns, and it's interesting that this is the second movie on our podcast which was directed by a woman. So Catherine Hardwicke directs Miss You Already, and it's based on a popular book, and it essentially circles around the friendship between two longtime women, one of whom is married and has kids and has her life together, and the other one who is sort of more of a free spirit and is trying to get her life together. And then something horribly tragic happens with one of them, and it's about how the two women support each other. And I'm not giving anything away. This is in the setup for the movie. Miss You Already stars Drew Barrymore, Toni Collette, as well as Dominic Cooper. And I think it's a British-based movie. It's at least set in Britain. And I know it was primarily aimed at the female demographic. And I know you and I, we both saw it. Joe, you did not, correct?
No, I saw this
too. We all saw this. Okay.
So, Joe, why don't you go first?
So, I mean, this thing's been done a couple of times recently. We've had 50-50, we've had The Fault in Our Stars, and this movie, you know, kind of falls in between those two in terms of...
Me and Elle.
Me and Elle and Diane Girl, that's right, yeah. So this whole idea of a character that is terminally ill and you know, the relationships around them, what that does, is starting to feel like an overused theme for me, and that was the thing I couldn't really escape while watching this movie. Now, this was... You know, very competently done. I think the two actresses, the leads, Drew Barrymore and
Toni Collette,
did you know, just a wonderful job here. And I think they saved the movie from being as annoying as I think I would have found it otherwise. So, you know, mixed feelings about this one. I'm really curious as to what you both think, because I think Rashmi is going to destroy it, and Yazdi might fall in line somewhere with me.
You're so right, Joe. So I'll start by saying I wish I'd missed this one, because this is 2 hours of my life I won't get back. What an awful movie on so many levels. So unlike you, Joe, I just couldn't buy Toni Collette and Drew Barrymore's friendship. And I think if you can't buy that... No, I just couldn't buy it, Yazdi. And I think if you can't buy that, then you're off to a bad start. You know, Toni Collette is a favorite of the movie world, as we all acknowledge that she is an incredible actress. But this is such a one-note performance for a character that I felt was more off the United States of Tara. Like, I feel like I've seen this facet of Toni Collette on the TV show that she used to do for Showtime, called The United States of Tara. And I was hoping that she would change out of that alter ego, but it was a very one-note character for me. And I think the main problem I had is she should have been charming and likable, so that we could sympathize with her and her journey ahead. But this plays like a bad soap opera, and everything, including the kitchen sink, is thrown in for good measure. And frankly, I just had no investment in any of the characters at all. It was so predictable, and it frankly threw a horrible light on women's friendships for me. I hated this movie.
Wow.
I don't think it was awful. I kind of enjoyed it. I think the dialogue is pretty good. I think the acting is very good. And I like the fact that they don't make a saint out of the person who is going through this illness. So she has a lot of edge to her. She has a lot of bite to her. And she's selfish and impulsive and does things that she shouldn't do. But I think it's understandable considering her situation. So I forgave the movie a lot. I mean, at some level, I agree with everything you've said. And I forgave the movie a lot. My bigger question about the movie is, why did they choose to make it? So, I mean, my thing is, if you are good-hearted, you want to tell this story, but then you pick this story, then you're constantly fighting not being maudlin, right? So this is a movie which is staring at death like 10 minutes into it, okay? Then for the next 2 hours, the movie's going to keep staring into death. And unless you are as good as 50-50 was, where you can completely bypass that, or if you somehow can avoid it, you're constantly walking this minefield of cliche and minefield of, you know, are they doing too much of it? Are they trying to make the audience cry? Are they, you know, are they being genuine enough? So I don't know. It's a well-intentioned movie, but, you know, it kind of lost the way. I mean, I kind of was waiting for the outcome to happen.
Yeah. I mean, part of the challenge for me here is, you know, it was a deliberate choice, but they chose to not make the lead character likable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very dangerous move, because, you know, if it's done well, it can work, right? You then start seeing the movie through the eyes of the other characters. But because so much of the focus here wasn't on the Toni Collette character, for us to think that she's a really basically an asshole at times takes away. She was. I mean, yeah, and that was the point. Kind of made me not sympathetic or empathetic to the character. And you don't always have to be, but I think without that, this movie has then a bigger hurdle to get over, and it's not quite carried through.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? I agree with you. You can make characters not likable, and that's okay, but there has to be something charming about them, or you have to understand why the other characters like them. Because in this case, if you're the best friend of this character who's an asshole, You have to understand why that person would still be vested in the relationship. Because all of us are saying, well, why are you in that relationship? So I think that's kind of what got me. And then I just couldn't get over, like I said at the beginning, that Toni Collette would be Drew Barrymore's friend. I think there are many other actresses which would have had better chemistry and been more equally placed. Toni Collette just seemed so much older than Drew Barrymore. And I don't mean that in a bad way in terms of physically, but she just seemed so much older. I found it hard to buy that they would be equals. I couldn't see them as equals, and generally best friends who have been friends since school, which these were supposed to be, have equality. And I couldn't see the equality in the relationship. And that's what kind of made the film fall flat then for me overall.
Again, I mean, clearly the two of you had a problem with the Toni Collette character. I didn't find her awful. I just think she was kind of a very strong woman who was used to getting her way and getting mm-hmm. things done, both at work and at home. And she was handling like a husband and kids and everything. And then once she knew that she had a terminal illness, she didn't always react according to how you would expect, which I can understand, where you're like, I'm going to die. Why should I be the responsible person? So I kind of saw it from that perspective, but yeah.
Was there anything you loved about this, Yazdi?
I did like the dialogue. Mm. I thought the dialogue was good. And, you know, they're both, I think with this material, okay, a person is dying and her best friend is there for her. If you take this kind of a premise, this movie's kind of done just about as best as you can do with that.
Yeah.
You know, with this, with these two characters. So it's nice to look at. I liked the character who plays Drew Barrymore's boyfriend. You know, he's not your typical supportive guy. You know, he has his own issues. I like the Drew Barrymore character who's frustrated with her friend as much as she loves her and ultimately reaches a point where she cannot deal with her until she can. So I kind of liked, it had the little ebbs and flows of real life about it. But I don't know why they decided to make this movie at all. I would, if somebody asked me to, I'd walk away from it. Like, I'd run away from it as soon as I could.
Yeah. Okay, let's sum this one up. So, Joe, you go first.
So, it was competently made, as Yazdi has said. I think it's, you know, it's reasonably well written. Just, you know, you're either going to relate to this and buy the premise, or you're going to be a little bit of a distance from it. And that's kind of where I sat. So it's somewhere between a 6 and a 7 for me. I'm going to be very, very generous and say 7, because in the moment, I didn't feel like I wanted to run screaming from the theater. I was quite enjoying it. And I think, you know, anyone who puts this on kind of casually with low expectations will get through it and you know, enjoy the way that the story pans out. So 7 out of 10.
Yes, D.
6 out of 10, but that's, you know, like you, I'm exactly at the 6.5 point, and I'm going to give it 6 out of 10. I mean, the one other thing I liked about the movie is that they could have kind of milked this to be really kind of sympathetic and try to make you cry from the front. And it kind of avoids that. It's reasonably unsentimental until the last 10 minutes of the movie. So I like that. And nobody really cries too much again until the very end. So if you're at the back of the plane, by all means, watch it. You know, any movie that gives Toni Collette a chance to be one of the lead actors. Likewise with Drew Barrymore, I don't see often enough of her. So for all of those reasons, it's not, you know, it's not terrible. I mean, I would recommend it on the back of a plane. 6 out of 10.
Okay, so I'll give you this. The final act of the movie was a little more bearable, but it all was so manipulative by that stage for me. This is supposed to be about a meaningful friendship between two women, and there was just nothing special about this relationship at all. I didn't love 50-50 when it came out, but that's a much better movie than this one. 2 out of 10.
Oh, my word. That's brutally unfair.
Horrible.
Wow.
I hated this movie. I was almost going to walk out, but then I remembered you're my ride.
All right, let's move on. Movie number 3 of the week is Victor Frankenstein.
Is it directed by a woman? Please tell me. It should be. That'll be a nice episode.
No, it's directed by Paul McGuigan.
Who is actually a woman. No.
Maybe like Tangerine, he wants to be a woman, but yes. No, we won't go there. So, very briefly, James McAvoy. put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable there.
Yeah.
it's a little see that through me. I'm reading this. So James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe star in a dynamic and thrilling twist on a legendary tale. Radical scientist Victor Frankenstein and his equally brilliant protege share a noble vision of aiding humanity through their groundbreaking research into immortality. But Victor's experiments go too far, and his obsession has horrifying consequences. Only Igor can bring his friend back from the brink of madness and save him from his monstrous creation. So this all sounds very silly. Again, this one, you know, the Frankenstein story is one that hasn't been done for a while. There have been a couple of comedic twists.
No, there was one
twists.
Last year called I, Frankenstein.
Oh, and there was Frankenweenie.
There was
correct,
Frankenweenie,
yes. Yeah.
Okay, so, okay, Frankenstein's been done to death. But
Aaron Eckhart,
can there be anything new brought to this genre? Rashmi, you're the only one that saw this again. So
this is a bad show for me. I'll start off by saying
here
that.
We go.
It's got
okay.
Bill Nighy.
So, look, this is a movie that starts off with so much promise, but it never delivers, despite both Daniel Radcliffe and James McAvoy overacting their little hearts out. This lacks the depth of human emotion that you would expect to see from a story like this. So I don't think I've seen a good rendition of Frankenstein that really captures why this man is obsessed with making a human out of not humans or bits of humans.
Is it a comedy or is it...
No,
it's action.
It's action. Okay. I mean, you know, look, it does explore very nicely the age-old argument of science versus morals. You know, just because you can, should you? It does that really, really nicely. And it has great effects and great editing. And at times, you know, it really reminded me of the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't have any of that fun. And it just took itself a little bit too seriously. So I think had it maybe gone the comedy route a little bit, then it would have saved the action genre of it. So I think overall, look, this is unfortunately a big budget spectacle that doesn't deliver anything we haven't seen before in a monster movie. I mean, really, it's a short review. 5 out of 10. Very average.
It's reviewed very badly. It's running at 29%. So you're not alone in that sentiment.
Yeah. And I'm probably being generous with my 5 because I've been so mean on the other two.
The only reason I would watch it is for the actors.
Right.
James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe.
Right.
So,
I think both have a tendency to overact a little bit.
Paul McGuigan, who directed it, is actually the director of the TV show Sherlock, which has been a huge hit. So, you know, it's interesting you made the comparison to Guy Ritchie's Sherlock.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe it's that. Is it set in London in foggy
streets? Yes.
So,
oldie London. The costumes are beautiful. I mean, look, the production is fantastic. There's clearly a big budget movie.
Right.
But I think it's that emotion. There's no depth, you know. Monster versus man. You know, that whole exploration which Frankenstein should be about.
Right.
None of that came through.
Bah, they can't all be good. It's okay.
Yeah, there you go.
They weren't any of them good this week, and if you listen to Rashmi. All right, so... We're going to wrap up the show because we do have like 15 other movies, it feels like, that we need to talk about today. So we'll try and get these shows out in somewhat rapid fire. So there'll be lots more Movie Wallers content on its way to you. Until then, mail at moviewallers.com. Let us know if you have any comments on the show. Facebook.com/moviewallers, Twitter.com/moviewallers. Too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.